The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of WMEL staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Bull Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bull's Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo. Welcome to Bold Talk Business Radio. This is the show where every week we share information with you, insights, information, strategies, tips, and tools on how to make your life and your business more successful and more satisfying. That's our mission, to help you every week, particularly if you are a business owner, if you're a professional in a career, if you are a job seeker looking to learn that next piece of knowledge that's going to help you land your next job interview and actually get the job because you've heard something very cool on Bull Talk Business Radio that is going to make a difference for you in the world and in your business. And so every week we bring you experts who can talk to you on different business topics. And today we're going to be speaking with investments attorney Russell Weigel in a few minutes about how to raise money for your business and not get in trouble with the SEC. Russell himself used to work for the SEC, so he's got a lot of insight. He's also the author of a book called Capital for Keeps, Limit Litigation Risk While Raising Capital. And that is available at capitalforkeeps.com. So we're going to be talking with Russell in just a few minutes, but I want to let you know a few things. One is, today's a special day according to the National Day Calendar, nationaldaycalendar.com. Which always has some interesting trivia for you to know about. Today is actually National Mom and Pop Business Owners Day. And that's observed every year on March 29th. I never knew, and I found out today because I checked the internet. And today honors all the small business owners, and I wish I had known about it a little sooner.
Yeah, I wish I had also, because I would have bought you a cake.
Yeah, chocolate, please. So I like that idea of a cake. I also would have sent some of my business owner clients and friends a nice e-card or a send-out physical card to wish them a happy small business mom-and-pop business owner's day. The way that you can celebrate today, and there's still hours left in the day, so get out there and support some of your local business owners so that they know they're appreciated and their business is valued in the community. Do you know what else today is? It's also National Lemon Chiffon Cake Day.
Oh, that's a good
one. That's my cake. There's my cake, Pete.
Okay. So,
and another thing I didn't know about National Chiffon Cake Day, Lemon Chiffon Cake Day, is that it actually came about because there was no lemon chiffon cake until there was angel food cake. And angel food cake was very popular. And in the 1920s, when, you know, the Hollywood people liked angel food cake, one of the an insurance agent who became a caterer after testing out recipes, he decided to make a lemon chiffon cake, and he sold the recipe eventually. His name was Henry Baker, oddly, apropos, right? And he sold his recipe and became pretty famous, and the rest is history. He sold the recipe to General Mills, by the way. So that was a business deal. And we talk business on Bold Talk Business Radio. That's how to turn your cake into a business.
That's how to have your cake and eat it, too.
Well, today we've got Russell Weigel on the line, and I want to make our time all about him right now. And Russell's book is a product of 24 years of litigating securities cases and counseling entrepreneurs. That book is Capital for Keeps. Russell, thank you for being with us today.
Donna and Pete, thank you for inviting me back.
I'm curious to know, you know, and we've enjoyed having you on the show in the past, and I'm curious for our new listeners today to understand a little bit about where you came from and why you thought it was important to write a book on raising capital.
Where I came from, I started my legal career working for the Securities and Exchange Commission. I was an attorney there for more than 10 years. And then when I left, it was 2001, I went into private practice. And, I became quite proficient at the SEC in investigating cases and litigating them and, you know, proving cases against entrepreneurs oftentimes. And but then when I went out on the private side, you know, it became my job to make sure that, you know, the public was protected from the government. And so over the course of time, you know, it became clear to me that a lot of the circumstances that were getting people into trouble appeared to me to be eminently avoidable. And I, you know, I would think more and more about that over the course of my private sector career. And in the Great Recession, I would say starting in around 2008, probably going into 2010, more and more people were just getting laid off from jobs. It was getting hard to find work. The economy was slow. And, you know, a large amount of people had, you know, worked their way into sort of creating their own job to try to, you know, put food on the table.
Well, that's curious, because it was 2008 when I founded Bold Marketing Solutions in a bad economy, but I'd had a marketing company earlier in New York, which was Convergence Marketing Group, and I did a transition, but I wasn't looking to raise money. I kind of self-funded my company. But there are people who are raising money, and I'm curious about what happens, Russell. What have you seen? Can you tell us a story that makes it really clear to us about why people need to know the facts about asking people for money for their business, and how they need to and why they need to understand the compliance issues? Can you give us an example? For instance, I know one of the issues that you talk about in your book is the need to adequately and accurately disclose all the history behind yourself and your company so that somebody who's investing with you understands what they're getting into. Can you give us an example of something like that?
Oh, yes, of course. Just to put it in context, I'm sure this statistic is, you know, bandied about often, but, you know, the most startup companies, maybe 80% of them fail within the first year, perhaps, you know, closer to 90% within the first 5 years. When you add on top of that, that many of those companies, or at least some of them, have gone out and have tried to fund themselves with outside investment money, then you are you're putting together a situation where, although those investments were certainly high risk, they are situations in which the investors might be looking back at the entrepreneur to get their money back. And that is sort of the underlying theme, the underlying risk that's addressed in the book Capital for Keeps. So in a recent example of this, I have a client who is going to serve 7 years in jail for being an officer of a small company, a legitimate company, that raised literally millions of dollars to finance the production and distribution, without getting into the details, just we'll call it a widget. And she and her husband were behind the business, and as I mentioned, lots of money was raised. Some investors got unhappy with the way that the company was progressing and started to file complaints. Well, it turned out that the government was able to make a case against them, you know, saying that, well, they didn't really have all of the widgets, certainly didn't have them all out in the field and earning revenue as they had claimed, or as they had told certain investors. And those investors relied on these, you know, sort of healthier than reality outlooks projected by the company, and then they were criminally prosecuted. They were also civilly prosecuted. Some investors have brought suits, but you know, the consequences to embarking in any transaction in which you're taking money from third parties is oftentimes extremely serious. And as I mentioned before, I think these situations are avoidable, largely. You know, if the entrepreneurs had educated themselves or become more aware of the risks that they are taking on when they're marketing themselves, when they're marketing the business, when they're marketing their products, and ultimately when they're talking to investors about making investments in the company, they have to be extremely careful and, in my view, should certainly seek legal advice all along the way when they're thinking about or planning to reach out and try to get money from private investors, because the downside risk to them is gigantic.
Yeah, I was curious. Now that's a company that had a product, a widget that they were saying that it was doing certain things. I'm curious to know if there's a major distinction in when you have just an idea. In other words, you're founding a business based on a concept that you think is going to be extremely profitable. When you go out to solicit people for money to back up your idea, is there a difference then between simply a concept versus an actual product?
No, Pete. What you're describing is basically the dot-com era, which many in this audience may remember, where people were getting funded with just a business plan and not even an office or a management team, mm-hmm. essentially getting funded on ideas. But the legal issues are the same. You know, even if you just have an idea and you're seeking money, then you know the representations you're making about your company, about your personnel, about your prospects, about the idea, about your competition, whatever you're telling them, you have to be accurate. And you know, the temptation always is to at least puff the circumstances a little bit, fudging a little bit and hoping, for the best. Too often that's the way things are done, and not a lot of thought is given to, trying to make sure that there's understanding, preferably documented on the part of the investor about what they're getting into.
We're going to follow up on that point in just a moment. I want our listeners to know that you've been listening to Donna Anselmo and Pete Anselmo on Bold Talk Business Radio, interviewing our guest expert investment attorney, Russell Weigel. This is AM 1060 WMEL.com. And we also welcome callers in our show very often at 321-241-1060. If you want to speak with us or ask a question, you're welcome to call in. That's 241-1060. Russell Weigel, one of the things that you talked about in the example you gave earlier was a company in which the investors started complaining about the way the company was run. I know that your book, Capital for Keeps, provides a lot of insight into different things that a business owner needs to do to make sure that they reduce their risk while they're raising capital. Can you talk a little bit about the types of agreements that a business owner who wants to bring in investors needs to make in terms of how the company is run and what, say, investors have? If that had been defined in a different way, is it possible that the people in that case or in similar cases might have a stronger legal leg?
I think so. The issue a lot of times boils down to, he said, she said, and a lot of conversations that go on, a lot of the communications between small company management and prospective investors are oftentimes just oral or telephonic, and so not a lot is documented, and as an attorney, I would much rather see that the communications, all of them, are vetted before they're made, and had they been, then certainly the entrepreneur would have a better chance of survival in court, if they had a statement and they were able to document and or had the documentation to show that everybody got the same thing, this person wasn't unique, or whatever that investor did get, here's what they represented to us, and here's what we told them, and this was it. If there's some threshold of disclosure that can be established, then, you know, oftentimes the ability to mount a defense, you know, will be a lot better.
Russ, what are the typical mistakes that business owners make when they are raising capital?
There are all kinds of mistakes, of course, but I think the typical ones really start with the failure to plan, you know, how much money they need, and defining or assessing what their actual internal resources are, identifying what their strengths are as management, and what their weaknesses are, and, you know, essentially the resumes of the management team, and and who their audience is, you know, who's the potential audience or prospective audience that they're going to be reaching out to for cash. And a lot of times people never do this. They just sort of, you know, think about the cash and just getting the cash, and not so much thinking about, you know, the perceptions that people have or are likely to have based on who they are and how they're communicating and how they're operating and what image they're projecting. And so these are things that we talk about or that I address in the book, for example, taking inventory of your people, your cash needs, and your friends.
When you talk about cash needs, do companies typically under or over project the amount of money that they're going to need?
Probably most often they under project, but over projection usually isn't a problem. You know, if they raise too much capital, then, you know, well, it's almost a situation of, well, God bless them. But they probably, you know, then are going to need some legal assistance in returning some of the monies if they didn't have the ability to, for example, issue securities in the amount for which they had actually received capital. But that's an event that it does happen, but it's relatively rare.
So if you were going to advise a client, and I know, and I want to make a disclaimer right here that this show is not determined to be legal advice. It's educational material that we're presenting. It's not intended to be legal advice for your particular circumstances out there if you're a listener. And I want to advise you to please consult legal counsel to apply any of the concepts that are discussed on this show. But attorney Russell Weigel is kind enough to share with us some of the information that's provided to the public in Capital for Keeps, Limit Litigation Risk While Raising Capital, which is the book that Russell C. Weigel wrote and is available online at Capital for Keeps and on various other websites. Russell, can you tell us a little bit about how people can get a copy of this book, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the advice that's in it?
Yes, it's the book is available in all the major book retailers, and it's also on Amazon, and the book has its own website, which you've just mentioned, which is capitalforkeeps.com. And it can be purchased there. It's also available, you know, electronically as a Kindle version. And on the Capital for Keeps site, it's also available as a PDF.
I'm curious about so many things that have to do with raising capital, even though I've spoken with you about information like this before. People who don't deal in this world all the time probably have difficulty absorbing the massive types of regulations and pathways that you really need to follow if you want to protect yourself and at the same time raise significant capital for your business. And obviously, if you don't have capital to operate your company, it's very difficult to grow. It's very difficult to stay in business. So, Russ, what are some of the steps that you would recommend in an educational way that people take or consider in their own approach to raising capital?
Well, I think that the topic is particularly apropos today, since you mentioned it's Mom and Pop Business Owners Day. the book certainly encompasses even mom and pop business owners, all the way up to, you know, Fortune 100 corporations. The fundamental issues really are the same, and the book is meant to educate even mom and pops or people with no legal training in a, what I hope that I've tried to do as best I can, in a plain English manner, to make the concepts as easily understandable as possible, and to distill the really thousands of regulations and the concepts embodied in them into a text that can be useful to educate anybody who's contemplating a capital raise. And so the idea here was, you know, education first. You know, if you read the book, then, you know, hopefully you'll have an understanding of the kinds of issues you need to learn about and seek out more information.
One of the things that I'm curious about, and I think a lot of our listeners would be, you know, we mentioned at the top of the show that we were talking about how to protect yourself from being regulated or being fined by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. We have only 2 minutes left to this half of the show, and so I want you to think about, and I want our listeners to think about, the fact that we're going to tell you after the news hour, what's the difference between a security, what's a loan. Let's talk about some of this different instruments coming up in the next,
that money that you've received from the hardest.
Also know that Peter Anselmo, my co-host, had a question for Russ. And
yeah, Russ, I was wondering if, particularly with mom and pop circumstances, if they, you know, are looking for money and going to family and friends, is there somehow a difference between that circumstance versus going out to the general public and saying, you know, here's my product, please fund, and that kind of thing? Is there a difference of responsibility that they have to provide to family and friends versus the general public?
Legally, there's no difference, but there are differences in the guidelines and in the regulations that they would be exposed to in any kind of a capital raise scenario, whether they did it privately through friends and family or publicly to the general public, which includes what I consider to be the widows and orphans of the world. People that the securities laws are drafted and enforced to protect investors, not to protect the people seeking money.
That's a great point. Let's leave it there, because we're going to come back after the news. We've only got about 30 seconds left, so I want to let our listeners know to hang in for some more information with Russell Weigel. You're listening to AM 1060 WMEL. This is Donna Anselmo with Bold Talk Business Radio, and we're going to be talking more about how you can get information on doing things right when you're raising money for your business. Stay with us after the news. Hang in, and we'll be back. We're going to give you some very specific information in about 5 more minutes.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Welcome back to Bold Talk Business Radio. This is Donna Anselmo, and today's talk is about raising money for your company and staying out of the SEC red tape so that you don't end up in jail. And that's actually a serious risk that people run when they are trying to raise money for their business. And actually, the onus of the lending relationship is really on the business that's soliciting money. Russell Weigel, who's our guest and on the line with us today, is the author of Capital for Keeps. We were talking about this in the first half of the show, and I'm just going to update you for people just tuned in that the book Capital for Keeps, Limit Litigation Risk While Raising Capital, is designed to educate entrepreneurs about the legal risks and consequences that are virtually unknown to them. And Russ, Weigel, the author, condenses about 25 years of concentrated legal experience, having worked with the SEC, into answers in this book. And it's really important that people who want to raise money for their business, and I really don't know too many people who don't want to raise money or couldn't use an infusion of cash, that when you're looking to do that, you really want to be able to navigate and very carefully tiptoe around those minefields that are out there with regulations that you don't know about, but that could really cause a problem for you. So I wanted to ask Russell Weigel, who's on the line with us, to help people understand a little bit about what constitutes an offer when you are asking people to invest in your company. Can you tell us a little bit about the actual formula of making an offer for people to invest in your company? What should you do? What shouldn't you do?
Well, the what an offer is, an offer as we're describing it here, is really just soliciting or seeking passive investment capital or offering some kind of investment opportunity. And the communication of that information, that desire, that offer, is a regulated communication in the United States. So that sounds maybe weird or absurd, but the fact that somebody is seeking investment, particularly passive investment, into some kind of business opportunity, is a regulated field, regulated by both the state and federal government. So the seriousness of it starts with this concept. Every state and the federal government have statutes that require registration of all investment offers. So every time a business is seeking investment from a third party, particularly a private party, they are required by law to register the offer or register the offering. And in the case of the mom and pop, that may seem absurd. They're just going to go, bring it up at the dinner table and, ask their rich uncle if, he'll kick in some cash into their business. And, there's no thought about deferring or seeking counsel or investigating, what laws apply to that simple communication. But legitimately, or maybe not legitimately, but truthfully, that's the way the system runs. And there are plenty of exemptions, which are the exceptions that you can travel under to avoid having to undergo the expense and effort of actually filing a registration statement with a state or with the federal government to seek this funding. There are plenty of exemptions, but you must comply with them to the T, and that's where people typically run afoul of the securities laws, is when they're doing the sort of unregistered offering. They're just winging it and hoping for the best. There is a system of rules and means of compliance with them to keep you out of trouble, and the trouble that can be brought on you is serious. So,
long-winded
answer for what is an offer.
Okay, when we were talking earlier about some of the mistakes that newcomers make when they're raising capital, for instance, lack of planning. So somebody might need to figure out how much capital they need. Where should people be looking if they have to raise money? What sources might they need to consider? For instance, seed money. How about a bank loan versus getting money from you know, your Uncle Charlie versus putting out a public notice that you're raising money? And can you even put out a public notice if you're raising money and you don't know the people that you're asking then?
Well, there are many, many potential sources of obtaining capital. They can range from requests for donations, to other means of financing that don't involve, traditional capital raising efforts, such as through the offering of an investment. I think I lost your question there.
Okay, well, what I was talking about was some of the places people can go to when they're looking to invest. So everything doesn't necessarily have to come out through a specific document. Sometimes people can get seed money from grants or donations. Oh. But I wanted to know, or even pre-purchase products like people do on Kickstarter, which is another whole area to talk about. But so on Kickstarter.com, which is a fundraising website, people put up a new product that they're developing. And so what they do is they ask people to pre-purchase the product to provide them money to even develop that. How is that different from a different kind of ask, Russell?
Well, I think what you're referring to, and this is what people typically call crowdfunding, but there are many opportunities, many different ways to raise capital. Crowdfunding encompasses a number of legal ways of doing it without invoking the application of the securities laws that I've been sort of talking about, throughout this this show. But so some examples could be I mentioned donations. Others, really anything that doesn't involve the person giving the money from expecting some kind of a financial return or hoping for one as a result of giving the money.
How I have another question for you, Russ. How expensive does it get to ask people to invest in your company? What do you have to give up typically when you're asking for an investment?
Do you mean what is the cost of doing the offering, or do you mean what is the expense to the company or the
actually both? What does it cost somebody to typically put an offer together? That's a great question. I think people would be interested if they have to contact an attorney or go through all the due diligence. What does it normally cost to do that?
The money involved ranges from next to nothing to potentially easily $1 million. It really depends on how much money you're seeking and who you're seeking it from, because those two questions sort of dictate the manner in which you go about it. And the manner is important because one of the options is to seek funding from the general public, particularly in large capital raise efforts. And oftentimes those solicitations are registered, but that also means that the issuer is required to get an audit and to put together a disclosure document that's going to be vetted by most likely both the federal and applicable state governments. And so those processes, those methods are going to be significantly more expensive than the avenue of seeking money through a private means. So like Pete mentioned, friends and family is probably the most typical way of obtaining capital. And the expense of getting capital that way is usually very low. So to put a dollar figure on it, done correctly, if a business were to take the time to put their accounting documents in order, to put together a subscription agreement of some kind to document the transaction in which they're seeking the money, not even putting together any kind of disclosure document, but just maybe a term sheet, probably all in with accounting expense, and assuming their business is relatively simple, they're probably talking certainly less than $10,000. Probably less than $7,500 to to put together basic documents, to get their internal documents in order, do some sort of, you know, corporate housekeeping that way, and demonstrate, you know, that they're organized and serious. It's probably getting into an expense somewhere in that neighborhood.
You're listening to AM 1060 WMEL. This is Donna Anselmo, host of Bold Talk Business Radio with Pete Anselmo in the Talk to Me station with me. Thanks to Vince Young on our board today, who is our friendly engineer. And we have attorney Russell Weigel, an investment attorney, on the line with us talking about capital raising. He is the author of Capital for Keeps, and you can find that book at capitalforkeeps.com. Russell Weigel, I want our listeners to know that this is educational material and is not intended to be legal advice for particular circumstances, so please do consult legal counsel to apply any concept discussed in this show. On that note, I want to ask you, Russell, can anybody invest in a business? Talk to us a little bit about what you have to do to make sure somebody is qualified to invest in your company so that you don't get in trouble, and when do you actually have to qualify an investor?
Well, you want to qualify them before they've given you money and before you've accepted it. That's a sort of a minimum mandatory threshold, I guess. But what are you looking for in terms of an investor? Depends on a number of factors, but oftentimes the typical criterion is, you know, you want to find somebody who, I mean, my basic mantra is, you know, avoid unaccredited investors at all costs. So you're looking for people that have liquid net worth of at least $1 million, or can demonstrate to you that they have personal income of $200,000 over the last 2 years, or $300,000 over the last 2 years, including their spouse's income. You know, those are the people from an asset test and an income test that would be candidates, you know, under the securities laws to invest in a startup business. So unaccredited people, which is everybody else, can do so, but I advocate in the book, you know, avoid them if at all possible, because the people that have the least amount of money are usually the ones that are the most litigious. And so limiting litigation risk is one of the points of the book. And so I start, you know, by advocating that companies ought to vet the prospective investor, not focus so much on the number of zeros on the check that they're being that's dangling in front of them, but to understand also who's offering it, and try to know something about their background. Have they been involved in lawsuits before? Some people are serial investors, and they're also serial litigators, and you don't want to have them in your company, because one of the scariest moments anybody can ever have as an entrepreneur is to have a litigation letter sent to them by an attorney accusing them of committing fraud and demanding all the money back, under threat of litigation or referral to the SEC or to the Department of Justice, what have you. You know, that can send fear in anybody, and most often, you know, startup companies are, you know, in desperate need of the cash, and they aren't in a position that if such an event happened from a, you know, an investor, that they'd be able to quickly turn around and stroke a check back to the investor to get rid of them. Usually the money's already been expended, and there's just not the ability to comply with these demands, and that makes the situation ever and ever worse, you know. So those are some of the major concerns that we try to avoid and address at the outset in the book.
It seems that there are many rules. There are so many rules, even just for me thumbing through your book to see. One rule, and I've got the book right in front of me, you've got Regulation D, 506C. These things sound very intimidating. And then you've got Rule 505, which has to do with dollar limits. Is there a particular rule that people really need to start with when they're, you know, to understand when they're looking to raise money?
Yes, the easiest rule to start with is Regulation D, Rule 506. And the reason is there are many benefits to the issuer who complies with that rule, because for one thing, if you don't comply with that rule, but you do an offering, a private offering that's not registered, then you have to fall into, you know, one of the any number of other exemptions. But only Rule 506 has federal statutory protection that preempts the states from imposing, you know, basically parallel regulatory requirements on you when you do an offering using that rule.
So that rule, according to your book, is a transaction exemption that requires all non-accredited purchasers to have such knowledge and experience in financial and business matters that they're capable of evaluating the merits and risks of the prospective investment. So in other words, if you're following and you're compliant with Rule 506, an investor can't say, well, then, you know, I wasn't, you know, they didn't give me enough information and I wasn't qualified to do this deal.
Well, they will always say that anyway. And so that's something that we try to, you know, mitigate by making sure that as much of the representations about the company are in
these sexual dysfunction issues.
A 15-year fixed rate mortgage at only 2%.
First of all, let me also
0.99%
tell you that ashwagandha
506 is really to try to keep
chronically tired
4-9-3-3
just seem to all
or simply dial pound to
always be worn out
250
in this
from any mobile
mode of what people
phone keyword get that
no cap on the amount of money you could raise under the rule, so it's infinite. But at the same time, you know, the rule limits the character of unaccredited investors who can invest in such an offering. And there are and if you have unaccredited investors in it, then the rule also imposes other requirements of disclosure, depending on the amount of capital being raised, that make it look more and more like a registered offering or a fully disclosed offering, the more capital that is raised. So the easy way to comply with the rule is to eliminate unaccredited investors, and then you don't have any concerns about whether or not they're sophisticated or not. And you limit yourself to those folks that are truly high net worth, and if you can keep it among that crowd, focused on investors who don't have a history of litigation, you're really targeting your offer to the safest people, probably the most willing to work with you and help you grow your company.
This is Donna Anselmo, your host at Bold Talk Business Radio on AM 1060 WMEL, the Talk to Me station. Pete Anselmo's in the studio with me, and we have Russ Weigel, expert investment attorney, on the line with us. I want you to know why we're doing this show today and talking about capital for keeps and how to raise money for your business and limit your litigation risk. And the reason for that is that the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, rules protect the investor in the case that they believe there's a problem or that there has been a situation or they allege that there's a situation of fraud and they should get their money back or get penalties for the money that they had lent to a business. But there is nobody out there. The SEC isn't out there interested in protecting the actual business owner who needed the capital to begin with. And so the book that Russ Weigel has put together, Capital for Keeps, is really a very easy to understand, even though it's a complex topic. It's written in a way that most people can understand what they can and cannot do, what they should and should not do. And also, of course, they can get in touch with attorney Russell Weigel directly if they have questions. And so, Russ Weigel, do you want to let our listeners know how they can reach you? I know your firm is based in Miami, Florida.
Yes, there in the book, we publish the email info@capitalforkeeps. That's capital, F-O-R, keeps, K-E-P-P-S.com. And that's probably the best thing. We're not advertising the law firm here, just talking about the book. And but you know, for those that are interested, you know, they can find me on the internet, Russell Weigel. Weigel is W-E-I-G-E-L. Russell Weigel, Miami, Florida.
Okay.
And thank you for having me on the show.
Well, we love having you on the show, and we only have a minute and a half left. I wanted to ask you a little bit about sweat equity. Is there an answer that you can give me? Is sweat equity a good idea?
Sweat equity is a great idea for many situations. The problem with sweat equity is that, you know, there's tax issues that arise because basically when you're paying somebody with stock or some equity in a company, then, you know, they may have, from the IRS perspective, received income even though they didn't receive cash. And so that's a sticking point and one that has to be dealt with very delicately. So it makes the issuance of sweat equity oftentimes cumbersome
well,
to comply with.
We're gonna leave it there, and I'm going to recommend that if people want to know more about whether it's a good idea to give sweat equity in your company to employees or people who participate in some way in helping to make a deal happen or a business happen, get capitalforkeeps.com or consult with Russell Weigel at Weigel, Hoffman Weigel, actually, attorneys in Miami. And come back next week for Space Talk. Our first segment every month is Space Talk, and we're going to have some interesting stories to tell you about what's going on in outer space next Tuesday on Bold Talk Business Radio. This is Donna Anselmo. It's been a pleasure joining you on the radio this week. Thanks to Russell Weigel for sharing his insight, and to Pete Anselmo and Vince Young in the studio. Have a great week. Bye.